Next Tier Bank Studios with WISR 680 AM Next Tier Bank, your hometown community bank. Dave is off once again, so yes, the whole news team pitching in. Tyler Friel is going to take the chair for just a few minutes, and of course, Kayla will be in, and we'll cover for Dave. But thank you very much. Merry Christmas, and thanks for joining us, and have a great day.
WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Mularkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
And welcome to the program. It's your turn on WISR 680 AM in Butler. Tyler Friel in for Dave Mularkey for the final day, as Dave will be back on the day after Christmas. We will have no It's Your Turn on Christmas Day, as we have not done for, boy, I don't know how long it's been, but it's been quite some time. So we're not breaking that tradition anytime soon. Dave will be back in the chair on Tuesday. But we've got a special show for you lined up today. I'm actually very excited about this one, as we will be talking about the top 10 stories that have happened in Butler and in the state. This is something that Kayla Malzahn and myself have done for, I would say, the past two or three years whenever we've filled in for Dave. And so we've done that again. And we'll talk about it in just a few moments. We'll dive into what the top 10 stories are, but there was no chronological order when it came to these. It was more, actually, I should say chronological order. It's not a ranking. So it is chronologically ordered, but rather not ranked from like number 10 to number 1. So that will be the first half hour or so of the show, and then we'll kick it over to our friends at Radio PA, as they will take a look at the top 10 stories that happened around Pennsylvania. And as we were getting ready for the show and listening to what they did, again, you have this tendency to forget exactly what happened during 2017. We found that when we did our local stories, getting that together, which stories were going to be the top ones, and then you find out all these stories that did happen, and you're like, whew, 2017 has been quite a year for news, especially in Butler and even across the state of Pennsylvania. So our friends at Radio PA always do a fantastic job with that, and so we will have them on the show during the 1 o'clock hour. And as I said, to kick things off, we will first go with our top 10 local stories. We're not going to wait much longer for that. We're going to turn it over to the top 10 local stories. Just wanted to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. As I said, Dave will be back on Tuesday. It's been a pleasure. I've appreciated all the calls that we've gotten during the open talk portions of the program. Appreciate all of our guests who have come on, and I'm sure Dave would like me to extend that thank you as well to all the guests that have showed up during 2017. Of course, he will be back. But on behalf of everybody at WISR and the Butler Radio Network, we wanted to say thank you, especially to you, the listener. We are always grateful, because without you, we are not possible. We are glad that you have found WISR as your home for Butler Radio for the past 76 years. Think about that. 76 years WISR has been on the air. And so we are so grateful that we have continued to find a generation of listeners, and we are always hoping to bring in another generation. Tell your friends about us. Tell your family about us. Tell them about the great local programming and news that we provide. Hopefully, at least that's what you think. You know, I don't know if you may necessarily think that, but if you're listening to us, maybe that is indeed the case. We're not going to wait any longer. We're going to kick it over to the top 10 local stories that happened in Butler in 2017. For now, I'm Tyler Friel. A big thank you to Tracy Morgan and Ryan Saylor, as well as Pat Parker, for helping keep this show afloat for the past 7 days. It is much appreciated. We're going to break. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. And of course, on this December 22nd, we are riding out the end of the year. Only a few more days left in 2017, and something that Kayla Molzan and myself have been doing over, I would say, probably the past 2 years, is highlighting the top local stories, the top 10 local stories that we saw in and around Butler this year. Part of this data, Kayla, is something that we were able to compile because of our website, butlerradio.com, and other things are just with you being our news director. director, stories that you saw stand out over the course of the year.
And it's interesting, too, because those two things a lot of times don't always match up. And we're talking, you know, we had our website person look at which of our stories got the biggest hits. And a lot of times they could be random stories. And, you know, we don't know what leads to that, but it's an interesting peek into what people are paying attention to and reading and wanting to learn more about. But I like doing this. I mean, I think for me, it's a way to reflect back on the year and kind of close out the year in such a way that, you know, you hope for better in next year. And I want to say, too, a lot of the stories do have to do with, you know, horrible things. We're talking homicides and murders and things like that. It's not like we wanted to focus on that. But I thought that, you know, being in Butler County, this is all news that happened in Butler County, that's still a big deal. You know, when a shooting happens in Butler, that's a big deal. When a homicide happens, that's a big deal. So I thought they deserved a place on the list.
As we say, news is generally, as it's known, is what surprises us. That's why it is news. It is what is new to us. And that is why, unfortunately, a lot of the stories are on the negative side, because when negative stories pop up, they are surprising. They just don't stand out as something you would see in day-to-day life. And for as much as we would love to highlight great stories that we see locally, which there are a number of them, the ones that gain most traction around this area and what gains most traction around the country are the stories that, again, are surprising. They're different. They're unique. And this is exactly what we do here in the top 10. And Kayla, as you are our news director here with the Butler Radio Network, I mean, I know you do a job of actively seeking out good news to counterbalance some negative stories. But at times it can be tough because, unfortunately, there are negative stories that dominate the headlines.
Yeah, and we do highlight some good stories.
Absolutely.
Not only on this list, but throughout our newscasts every day. That being said, you say that, you know, news is the stuff that surprises us. You know, take Pittsburgh or take Philadelphia, just, you know, the two obviously biggest cities in Pennsylvania. Homicides, they're really not, you know, surprising.
Not in
Pittsburgh.
Those areas.
You know what I mean? They're not, a shooting's not surprising. How many shootings can we have per week in the Pittsburgh, you know, city area? So at least it's still surprising in Butler County, if that makes any sense.
Yes, no, I completely agree with you. And with that, we have exchanged our thoughts before we dive into the top 10. Let us not wait any longer. And we are not doing top 10 stories like a countdown style. These were put together chronologically.
Yeah, and it was kind of, I just looked at the year 2017 as a whole and said, okay, what were some of the biggest things we did throughout the year? So we'll start, this actually started a day before the new year. It was New Year's Eve last year. There was a home invasion and murder of a man in East Butler. So there you go. That's surprising. I mean, not only happening in Butler County, but it was in East Butler, a pretty sleepy area of the county, I would say. This gentleman's name was James Martin, if you remember this story. He was 74 years old, found dead on New Year's Eve by a friend. The investigation continued for 2 months. An arrest was finally made in March, but this put the community in East Butler on edge, especially around, you know, the holidays. It was New Year's Eve. They weren't sure at first that it was a home invasion. And then, you know, as the investigation progressed, they said, yeah, it looks like it was. But it took them until March to make an arrest in this case.
And it was a very bizarre story. You don't see too many men in their 70s being murdered in a home invasion. And as you mentioned, in East Butler, a rural area of the county, a place that I would say is very tight-knit. A lot of people in East Butler know each other, get along well with each other. This one, definitely, to begin the start of the year, was a shocking news story. And when we talk about the conclusion of this story, it has not reached one yet. From my understanding, that has not gone to trial, or a plea deal has not been something like that has not been agreed to. This is still floating out there.
Still going through the court process, as with a lot of these that we'll talk about on these lists. But the suspect has been arrested. His name's Christopher Cannon of Butler, and he was charged with homicide as well as a number of other things. But yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there with it put the community there on edge for a while. So that was an unfortunate way to start the new year in 2017.
And then just a few days later, January 20th, it was the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. Obviously, 2016 consisted of a number of stories related to the election, definitely in my lifetime that I can remember. Mm-hmm. The craziest election, of course, you've got the election of 2000 between Bush and Gore and how long that was strung out for. But the attention that had surrounded this election between the two candidates that were very polarizing candidates, and still an election that is talked about even though we are almost a year and a month behind the results of the election, we still talk about it to this day. The local angle here, the Butler County Republican Committee hosted a charity gala celebrating the new administration. Western Pennsylvania natives sung the national anthem at the inauguration. Jackie Ivanko, Representative Mike Kelly was an attendee at the inauguration. Several Pennsylvania Democrat congressmen boycotted the inauguration. This was definitely, and it still is, to me, the story that dominates the news headlines every day, mm-hmm. the Trump presidency.
Right. And at first I was like, you know, this is more of a national story. I'm not going to put it on a local mm-hmm. list. But then I was like, you know, let's go back to 2016 and how divided we were. You could drive down the street in a lot of parts of the county and see signs. You know, there'd be one neighbor yep. with Trump signs everywhere, one with Clinton signs. I saw a couple roofs of houses that actually had Trump signs painted on them. I mean, people were into this election. They were passionate about it. And when he, you know, was sworn in, a lot of people traveled there from here simply because of proximity. It was mm-hmm. you can go. You know, it's 4 hours away. You're not coming from Arizona or California. So I think we did see a lot of local people say, I'm going to do this, you know, whether they were huge Trump supporters and they were ecstatic or they just wanted to see a president be sworn in.
And again, even on a more local angle, Mike Kelly, the representative from Butler, was one of the early backers of Donald Trump True. During the campaign. So there was always a connection between Mike Kelly. I don't want to call him establishment, but he was in Congress for a while Trump was running his campaign. And Mike Kelly was a backer. And on the latest version of It's Your Turn, when Mike Kelly was here, he still supports Trump and his presidency. Mm-hmm. So there still is obviously a local angle that we see here just from the congressman in our backyard.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, are we sitting here in a couple years when we're talking about whether Trump runs for, you know, another term? Mm-hmm. Will all those people that we saw here locally still support him? Or will some not? You know, we obviously don't have a crystal ball. We don't know. But I think that Trump's administration is going to probably be a top 10 news story throughout the next several years.
I would completely agree. Mm-hmm. We were talking Steelers and Patriots on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn, mm-hmm. and we had a Trump reference sneak in from one of the callers.
We did.
This is just where we are in this day of age. I mention every day, I mean, it seems like in the news, with whenever we get a CBS News update at the top of every hour, there is a story about the Trump presidency. And I'm not saying that those stories weren't there about President Obama, but it just seems like this is more prevalent. He is a social media president as
divisive.
Well. More divisive of a president. Whichever way you fall on it, you see him almost every day. Mm-hmm. And so I think we would be remiss not to put that into our top 10 local stories of
yeah.
the year.
Yep, I agree. That was number two.
Number three, this one was a major story, and that was the lead-tainted water at the Butler Area School District. They found lead in the well water at Summit Township Elementary School. That, in and of itself, not good. But the fallout from this, Kayla, is what was really amazing.
Absolutely, yeah, and we're still dealing with it. As we sit here today, yeah. The elementary school where this all occurred is still not open. It's set to be opened on January 3rd, and I know the process to open it back up, materials and such, have already started. But, I mean, think about that. This happened in late January, and the elementary school is still not open. Kids still mm-hmm. not attending school there. This was huge, and I think, you know, I remember it was a Friday where this all came down. I remember mm-hmm. it specifically. And, you know, this was on the heels of everything that we heard from afar from Flint, Michigan.
Yeah.
You know, and we saw those pictures and we saw all the health concerns over there. So when this came down and it was, you know, we're talking about lead and water at a Butler Area School District building, you're saying, wow, this is, you knew this was going to be huge. And like you said, it was. And I wanted to take a step back for a second on how this all came about, because it was interesting. There was actually tests done in August of 2016 that showed these high levels of lead. But again, if you're following us, we're talking that this didn't come out until the end of January. And that was the big, you know, would prove to be one of the big issues, that it didn't come out publicly. Mm-hmm. And It was a right-to-know request by a school board member in late January that showed the district had been aware of this, the maintenance supervisor had been aware of this in August. You know, several months had passed, and he hadn't told, you know, told anybody or told any parents or told any children. This led to, what, at least three resignations, including the superintendent.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Dale Lumley, who was very familiar with the Butler County area, a longtime superintendent at the Knox School District, or South Butler School District, I should say. Former principal at Butler Senior High School, former teacher at the high school. He was a local guy.
People knew his name.
Yeah, people knew who Dale Lumley was. He was the one that replaced Michael Strutt, a longtime employee of the school district, who replaced Ed Fink. And this was during a major transition time, which is why he was brought in as the schools were consolidating. And there was still a little bit of wariness about what the procedure was moving forward, what schools were going to close, what all was going to happen. So you had a district that was already in the throes of controversy, I would say, nonetheless, you know, with the school board and what their path was going to be for consolidation. So that was what was dominating the storylines for the school district. When this story came out, everything took a right turn, and the focus shifted here. And I don't want to say cover-up because I don't want to go there, but the resignation, I think, was because people believed there was one.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, from all of my reporting, I don't think there was one. We had a great working relationship with Dr. Lumley, and even on that Friday when this news broke, you know, he spoke with us, and he went on the record with us and said that he did not know. And I truly do believe that. I think it fell on the processes and how things were handled. Other than Dr. Lumley, you had Assistant Superintendent for Elementary Education, Dr. Mary Wolf, resign. You also had the District Maintenance Supervisor, Glenn Terwilliger, also resign. And this happened really swiftly, especially Lumley's resignation. If you remember, there was a petition within days calling for him to step down. 900 people signed it. I don't think he felt like he even had a choice. And I think he just, in his mind, and I mean, I think it's fair to say he loved being an educator. I mean, why would he work in this industry that he did for so many years? He probably thought, in order for this to move forward in this district to get back to where it needs to be, I need to step away and somebody else needs to come in.
And someone of his age, I don't know what it was, but he was obviously a longtime educator. And again, I think him having connections to the Butler area is something important to keep in mind here. This wasn't a superintendent that came into the district after Michael Strutt, you know, with these grand plans to change it. He had a vision for what he wanted the school district to be, because he had also been a part of the school district for a long time. So when these when we found out there was lead in the water at Summit, it just snowballed, and eventually it snowballs to the top. And I think that was just a case of, like you said, for Lumley and his belief for the district to continue to move on, he wasn't in the picture just because of how people felt about this particular situation.
Right. It always comes to the top, you know, because if people, even if it wasn't his fault, you know, if, even if he didn't know about it and he wasn't covering it up, as the superintendent, as the top of any organization, you're supposed to know, you know, what's happening underneath you. But this was a big story, and Summit kids have since been attending Broad Street Elementary. They got, you know, the Summit Elementary hooked up to public water lines, Pennsylvania American water lines. They used to be on well water. This took a lot longer than I think originally they were expecting it to take. They spent, I mean, if we can talk about the money for a second,
I
know they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to address these problems, which obviously these problems needed to be corrected. But this is a district that doesn't have money. I mean, a lot of public school districts here in Pennsylvania don't. So, you know, you're just talking about another setback financially.
And we talk about consolidation. Broad Street at one point was up for sale. I'm not sure if an agreement was there between the district and J.M. Beatty, the furniture store out there, but we remember the offer being there, which was upwards of $500,000, if I remember correctly. That offer was pulled back because they were wondering what to do during the consolidation process. So that process was still going on when this lead in the water at Summit happened. So they move an entire school down to Broad Street Elementary School, And now they are there, and ironically, a full circle thing, they are planning on going back to Summit on January 3rd, mm-hmm. which, keep in mind, for the maintenance staff and for teachers, they're going to have to uproot their classrooms and what they have been operating with and move it to a different school in the week between Christmas and New Year's.
I mean, that's a big deal. And we know that the district, as far as we've been told, they still would like to eventually sell Broad Street, mm-hmm. but they have to start that whole process again, and who knows, you know, if the offers will come in, will they be as good as they were? I want to touch on real quickly, too, just the lawsuits, potential lawsuits. It's my understanding, we do know that there was a Butler resident, her name was Jennifer Tate, and her minor daughter, together, they filed a suit in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Pennsylvania against the school district, against the former superintendent, Dr. Dale Lumley. I believe this suit was dropped. It was very confusing as we were going through everything. But I believe that this did not proceed. I also know that when this first came out, state police were looking at whether to file criminal charges, and the district attorney was looking at filing those as well, and those were never filed. So that's kind of where we stand with that.
And I think that's a good end point for that particular story to remind that there were no criminal charges filed in that story. We're going to move to our fourth story of the year, and that's the fatal shooting at a Butler City apartment in March. Rashawn Adams, a 20-year-old of Philadelphia, was shot twice and killed Thursday morning at the Wick Street Apartments. This is a complex located near Memorial Park. The shooting reportedly followed a dispute over $900. Police looked for the suspect, 19-year-old David Day-Day Franklin, for months. And they later found him in May in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, and I think this deserved a place on the list, A, because it's a homicide, and we, mm-hmm. you know, we mentioned, luckily, those don't happen here a lot, so when they do, it is big news. But this was during the morning hours. I mean, it was a Thursday. It's so close to Butler Memorial Park, and I wanted to highlight that because, you know, that's some place that a lot of people go and, you know, they feel safe or they want to feel safe. Mm-hmm. This is right in the heart of the city of Butler. So for this to take place and, you know, whether it was over drugs or whatnot, you know, that's for the police to figure out. But this investigation took a while. They didn't arrest the suspect. You mentioned David Day-Day Franklin for months. He was found in Richmond, Virginia. In terms of my reporting, I think they knew who he was. They knew he did it. They just didn't know where he went. Mm-hmm. And it took a while for them to get him. But it's still going through the court process as well.
We're going to move on to our fifth story. This one was definitely one that dominated most of the summer news headlines, at least for a while, and that was the death of 4-year-old Bentley Miller of Butler. The homicide happened late March. It was at the Super 8 Motel in Butler Township. Keith Jordan Lambing, he was the boyfriend of the boy's mother, so not the father in this instance. He is accused of sexually assaulting Miller, and there was a lot of drama immediately following the boy's death, and this is where it picks up. A manhunt was out for Lambing, and it ended quickly. His mother ended up being charged for hindering Lambing's apprehension. The two of them were found in an abandoned home on Walker Avenue in Butler City. In late April, prosecutors said they were planning to seek the death penalty against Lambing. That is still going through the court. We also saw several memorials that honored Bentley, one in Diamond Park immediately following his death. Another was in September in Memorial Park to honor him on what would have been his fifth birthday. There is a planned revitalization project in the works at Butler Memorial Park in Bentley's name. And Bentley's Army, it was the Butler AM Rotary and AK Cares, which is the nonprofit of AK Steel, have been working on the project. This was a major story, Kayla.
Yeah, this was. And I mean, this just rocked the community, and you could feel it when it mm-hmm. happened. I believe it was March 21st. And just when the details came out that, you know, a family with this four-year-old had more or less been living in this hotel in not so great of conditions, you know, the mom was reportedly at work that day and left her four-year-old in the care of her boyfriend, who, as you mentioned, wasn't the father. And then these horrific things come out of how he was abused and how that abuse led to his death. And like you said, not only is that horrible, but then you have the abuser trying to get away, the mom allegedly helping, the mom of the suspect allegedly helping him to avoid police for a day or so. It did wrap up quickly, but, you know, I have pictures. I was looking at pictures from the memorial, as you mentioned, that happened just after in Diamond Park. This was just heartbreaking. I mean, this was a four-year-old who had his whole life ahead of him. He was the cutest little thing. Had his life ended. And I think it brought up a bigger conversation, too, if I can. And I don't think it's too much of a stretch, but if you're talking about, like, our culture and how a lot of people go through divorce, mm-hmm. and they have children with one person, maybe they get a divorce, start dating another person, and that person who's not the father or mother of that child could be left in their care. That's tough. You know, that's difficult, especially for, I mean, look at the father in this case. Doesn't have his four-year-old anymore. He was never, ever accused of anything. It's tough. It's very tough. And I've seen, you know, stories like, not to this extent, but, you know, in that same realm where you see abuse and where you see, you know, from a boyfriend or from a girlfriend who it's not their child, but they're watching them.
This was one of those stories when you work in the news department that is really tough to cover. You just read the gory details of exactly what happened. That makes it tough. Just even the overall situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, a four-year-old kid dying in an easily preventable death. That's what makes this job tough at times.
Yeah.
And like you said, it rocked the entire community. I mean, people were fully aware of what exactly happened. And you did have the rumors going around one way or the other about what it may have been, and that it mm-hmm. just comes with today's day and age and social media.
Sure.
And people then can voice opinions on different things. And people are connected to one another more intimately in this community. And this type of story is the one where you're just like, it's tough.
Yeah, that's it. It was tough. And we will see, you know, I think the community as a whole will remember Bentley. I really think mm-hmm. we will for years to come. And you mentioned there is a planned revitalization project in the works. This is supposed to be happening at Butler Memorial Park, and this is all in Bentley's name. You have mm-hmm. the AM Rotary coming together, the nonprofit arm of AK Steel working with Bentley's Army, which is just, you know, community members in support of him. And we'll see how far this goes. The last I heard, it was a couple months ago, that they had a lot of money backing this and they wanted to revitalize the park and do it all for Bentley. So we'll see what happens.
Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll continue with our other remaining top five stories. We are highlighting the top 10 stories in Butler County in the year of 2017. You're listening to It's Your Turn. Tyler Friel, Kayla Molesey, and filling in for Dave Malarkey.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, they've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and would like to take this opportunity to wish everyone a joyous Christmas and a healthy, happy, and prosperous new year.
Hunter Truck Sales, providing solutions for all your trucking needs. Check out huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn. Tyler Friel and Kayla Molesey with you as we are highlighting the top 10 stories of 2017. We are on story number 6 right now. And Kayla, this is the homicide of a Butler woman, Melissa Bartow, who was 26 years old and was allegedly killed by her abusive boyfriend, Ishmael Ramsey.
Yeah, this happened, I believe, in June. This was another horrible story. You know, it brought up alleged abuse and you know, abuse in a relationship. Ramsey was arrested within days after allegedly committing this crime, and his whole situation is still going through the court process as well. So we'll see, you know, how that plays out in the coming year. But this was another young woman, 26 years old. She worked at a downtown Butler business. You know, it just, it hit home for a lot of people. I will say quickly that this press conference that I attended, they brought in her family, and it was heartbreaking to hear from her mom specifically, pleading with people in the Butler community to, you know, specifically women, if you are, you know, in an abusive relationship, seek help, talk to someone, talk to Voice, which is the Victim Outreach Intervention Center in Butler, you know, talk to a friend, it doesn't matter. She felt that she missed some signs and didn't want anybody else's family to go through that.
And I think that's what's important to highlight about this particular homicide, is that it didn't appear to be drugs or alcohol. I mean, you don't know what extracurricular things are going on, but this just appeared to be an act of jealousy and an abusive relationship.
Yeah, and just an awful situation you don't want anybody to find themselves in.
Our next story, this is story number 7. A Butler County woman was charged with allegedly overdosing while 7 months pregnant. Casey Dishman, 30 years old, was charged with felony aggravated assault of an unborn child following her alleged June 22nd overdose.
This speaks to the opioid addiction and, you know, epidemic, as it's been called, that we're seeing not only in Butler County, but all throughout Pennsylvania and the country. I mean, this, you know, this is as bad as it gets, right? When you have a mother who is pregnant and can't stay off the drugs. I mean, this was a heartbreaking story. And again, her situation still playing through the court process as well. But it was bad. She had just gotten out of jail. I think it was within 5 days since her release. She was at home, allegedly found drugs, did them. She was found by her boyfriend, who was the father of this unborn child. And then there were some details, too, that, you know, he didn't do everything that he could to stop this. Yes, he called 911, but he allegedly lied and said she had a seizure disorder, didn't say that she was overdosing on drugs, which meant that she didn't get Narcan, the anti-overdose drug, as quickly as possible. Could that have, you know, made things a little better for her baby? We'll never know, but it was just a sad situation.
And it led to some legal questions as well as whether or not she should be charged with the things that she was charged with.
Yeah, absolutely, because she was facing felony aggravated assault of an unborn child charges. And there is precedent in the state where mothers can't be charged with that for an unborn child. So there was a lot going on with that, and it is still playing out in the courts.
Yeah, I thought that was even a little bit of an interesting take out of this, is that I believe it drew at least state interest.
National.
It drew national interest as well, because people had you know, feelings one way or the other.
Absolutely.
About how this should be ruled
legally.
We move on to our next story, and it's a positive one.
Yes.
This happened in August 2017. The Traveling Vietnam Memorial Wall made a stop in Butler County.
Yeah, this was huge. Like you said, it was August 2017. This Traveling Vietnam Wall is a replica of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in our nation's capital. A lot of people can't get down there. A lot of people up here knew someone. There were 43 veterans from Butler County who lost their lives in Vietnam. A lot of people, you know, remember those people. They remember that time when it was happening, in what era in our country. So this support for this was amazing. Before they even set it up at VA Butler Healthcare, they escorted it from a church in Cranberry. They took it down Main Street, and it was I will say it was insane to see. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. There were 1,000 motorcycles, 3 helicopters, several police vehicles from all different departments. I mean, think of that, 1,000 motorcycles escorting this wall. It was a sight to see.
One thing that I would like to say is, during the past 2 years, I've had a chance to work closely with the American Legions in Butler, particularly 778 in Lindora, as well as stopping down at 117 on different occasions. What these people have been able to do in and around the community has been amazing. What they do for veterans, what they do for each other, what they do for different charity organizations. I have been very honored to get to know a lot of members of the Legion, talk to a few commanders at times. These people are doing very good work. And obviously we thank them for their service, but their service, I don't want to say not for their country, but the service to their community that they have been doing since they've been back at Butler, has been outstanding. Yeah. And this was one of the big highlights that I thought was a great choice for a top 10 story.
Absolutely. I think that's very fitting that you say that. And the support that they receive from the community, I think they should feel good that, you know, they're making a difference.
It's been a tumultuous year in the city in terms of politics. As we turn to our next story, this is story number 9, and it was an election year. The Butler City mayoral race was underway, and current Mayor Tom Donaldson will end his first 4-year term as Butler mayor at the end of the year. He was not reelected.
No, he wasn't. And, you know, we saw candidates declare to run in early of this year, and then we had the primary in May, narrowed the field down, as, you know, I'm sure you all remember, Republican Ben Smith and Democrat Jamie Lee Garing. And I think that's noteworthy too. They were both young professionals.
Yes,
I mean,
very young.
Much
I shouldn't
younger.
Say very young. Let me.
No, but I mean, much younger than I would say. I don't know what the average age is of someone who runs for mayor in Butler, mm-hmm. but it seemed that they were younger than people who had run in the past. Donaldson did run for a second term. He was defeated in the primary. He did unsuccessfully mount a write-in campaign. But then in November, back last month, we elected Ben Smith, who is a business owner, and we'll see what he does for the city in 2018.
Do we know when inauguration is? It's sometime in January,
yeah. Usually, I don't know if it's, I would guess it was January 2nd or January 3rd. Okay. They usually try to do it right at the beginning of the year.
But we mentioned tumultuous real quick for city council. You had mentioned there still isn't a fire chief inside the city. It's just been a little bit of infighting between city council.
Yeah, it has, and I'm anxious to see how Ben, you know, when he gets in there, Kenny Bonus reelected, you know, Kathy Klein not sitting there anymore, not saying that any one of them, you know, was the cause of this. There was just a lot of disagreement on council with mm-hmm. the mayor and other council members. So I'm anxious to see what will happen next year.
And we'll leave it there as we move to story number 10. And this one is not a story in particular, but rather an overarching story that we have seen evolve through 2017, and that is the opioid crisis.
Yeah, we had to put this on the list. I mean, this is what we're dealing with. And I think it was very fitting, too, that just in the news this week, we talked about a memorial that was set up on Main Street in Butler, and it was set up just by community leaders coming together, community members, not one agency in particular, but they set up 84 crosses on Main Street at a site there, and each cross represents one person who was alive at this time last year and has since lost their life to addiction. It's a huge problem. It's, as we mentioned earlier in the show, it's not just a Butler County problem. It's mm-hmm. not just a Pennsylvania problem. It's a nationwide problem. But it's hitting here, and it's a big story.
And that wraps up our top 10 local stories. To recap, the home invasion and murder of a man in East Butler. Number 2, the inauguration of President-elect Donald Trump. Number 3, the lead-tainted water at the Butler Area School District that led to resignations by top administrators. Number 4, the fatal shooting at a Butler City apartment in March. Number 5, the death of 4-year-old Bentley Miller. Number 6, the homicide of a Butler woman, Melissa Bartow, who was killed by her abusive boyfriend, allegedly killed, excuse me. And number 7, a Butler County woman charged with allegedly overdosing while 7 months pregnant. Number 8, the traveling Vietnam wall comes to Butler County. Number 9, the Butler City mayoral race. And number 10, the opioid crisis. That's your top 10 local stories of 2017. And we will now hand things over to Radio PA as they take us through the top 10 stories across the state of Pennsylvania. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 south and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
This is Countdown 2017, a look back at the top 10 Pennsylvania news stories of the year. And now from the Harrisburg studios of the Radio Pennsylvania Network, here are your hosts for this year-end retrospective, Brad Christman and Scott Lamar.
And welcome to our 14th annual celebration of a year's worth of stories here at Radio PA. During the next hour, we'll review the top 10 Pennsylvania stories of the year as voted on by our own news staff and other selected members of the statewide media. But first, Scott Lamar, good to have you back in the studio for another year of reflection.
Brad, I always look forward to looking back and bringing some context to the big stories of the year.
Busy, busy year.
It has been a busy year.
Aren't they all anymore, though? Jeez. Scott, by the way, is host of one of the premier radio talk shows in the state, WITF Harrisburg's Smart Talk. Scott's show delved into most, if not all, of the stories we'll be spotlighting during this hour. So how did we come to the top 10 stories you're about to hear about? Well, in early December, we voted, and the top vote getters were listed in a series of one-minute features that you may have heard on many of these Radio PA affiliates over the past couple weeks. We sometimes have a little fun with the stories, but all of them are major issues that impacted Pennsylvania in 2017. With that, let's jump right into story number 10, and a problem that is seemingly getting worse as a state lawmaker continues to push the bounds of decorum and power under the state Capitol dome. For years, the House State Government Committee, under the chairmanship of Butler County Republican Daryl Metcalf, has been ground zero for many of the most bombastic moments in Harrisburg.
I am going to ask security to remove anybody who's disrupting
no,
this committee.
No, that's not
going to
happen.
The committee has seen confrontation, threats, and Democratic member walkouts, but another year of questionable decorum ended with one of the strangest face-offs yet, as Metcalf took offense to Democrat Chair Matt Bradford in early December when he touched Metcalf's arm to emphasize a point.
I'm a heterosexual. I have a wife. I love my wife. I don't like men, as you might, but stop touching me.
Oh, he touched me. Some Democrats called on Metcalf to resign. Others want him removed from the chairmanship. But Metcalf is doubling down on his straight pride.
It's routine in our society now that homosexuals can flaunt their sexuality in our faces.
A legislative committee out of control. One of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Christman. I will say for our listeners' benefit, Scott, you're hearing these for the first time as we play them, so I treasure the smile that hit your face on that, because we do have a little fun. But the underlying story here is that the House State Government Committee, a very important committee in Harrisburg, has just been spiraling into chaos year after year after year, and I think this year was maybe the worst yet.
It is one of the most important committees in the State House of Representatives. I don't think that many people realize how much legislation goes through that committee. And if it is in chaos or there are some major disagreements, which there were this year, about issues, about legislation, they often don't make it to the floor of the House.
Right.
And House members don't get to vote on them. So you need some decorum. You need some, I don't know, you need some bipartisanship. You need to work together.
Bipartisanship.
I know. What a quaint thought.
How about that? No, we heard a confrontational soundbite in that piece from one of the House State Government Committee meetings in October, which was dealing with one of Metcalf's pet issues, the belief that massive amounts of illegal voters are out there influencing elections. It was one of those informational hearings where Metcalf only allows one side of an issue to be heard, so everyone was already amped up, and that voice of opposition that you heard in that piece was State Representative Christopher Rabb of Philadelphia. Here's a longer version of that exchange as Metcalf's handpicked witness was beginning her testimony.
Ms. Kearns.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity.
Parliamentary inquiry.
There is no opportunity for a parliamentary inquiry. We are receiving testimony, Representative Rabb.
Yes,
please.
I realize that.
Representative Rabb, you're out of order. Please come to order.
Chairman, you've just provided this testimony.
I am going to ask security to remove anybody who's disrupting
no,
this committee.
No, that's not
going to
happen.
And the showdown just escalated as Democratic Chair Matt Bradford stepped in.
I would ask security to please assist Representative Rabb if he's not going to come to order.
Chairman,
they know their jobs. They know they're not allowed.
The Speaker and the Speaker alone has that power.
That's right.
Please don't use powers you don't have.
Representative Bradford and Representative Rabb, you both should check with the Speaker's office. I am the chairman. I am convening this meeting. I have authority to rule over this hearing.
I would ask you
as the chair.
There's just a certain unchecked arrogance and power coming from Daryl Metcalf when he's chairing these hearings. And we've documented over years here at Radio PA how he uses that committee and almost wields that gavel as a weapon against voices and issues that he doesn't like or that doesn't line up with his ideology. This has been one of the more, in a long string of bizarre years, one of the more bizarre years for that committee.
Brad, I think that sound clip is probably a public service to let voters know, let Pennsylvanians know, what happens behind the closed doors sometimes of those committee meetings, and not just the committee meetings, but the full House, the full Senate. We are in, our form of government is adversarial.
Yeah.
But it is supposed to be adversarial when it comes to issues and agreeing and disagreeing and being able to do that in a way that has some graciousness and you could bring facts to the table. But when it's like that, nothing gets done.
And lest everyone think that this is just about Daryl Metcalf versus Democrats, well, it's not. Let's go to a moment on the House floor this year. There were protesters that marched to the Capitol, and they did what protesters try to do. They try to disrupt things at the Capitol. Daryl Metcalf was holding a hearing that you could hear the protesters in the background. They blocked him as he tried to get to his office. He was very upset about that. They were holding a sit-in in the hallway outside of his office. And his temper once again spilled over. But this time, it wasn't in committee. It was on the House floor as House Speaker Mike Terzite, a Republican, the Republican leader in the House, the top Republican in the House, tried in vain to control him.
The group that he's referencing.
No, Representative Metcalf, just please tell me for what purpose do you rise?
I object to a member of this legislature supporting fake news by getting up and
Metcalf,
claiming that people
hold.
That are marching here are all Pennsylvanians when they're actually some
Metcalf,
of them out of state.
Hold. Representative Metcalf, please refrain. There have been objections on unanimous consent to both individuals. At this time, we're going to be adjourned until noon.
So adjourning the House at times is the only way to pull back the reins on this guy. We have to take a break, but coming up next, we continue our list of the top 10 Pennsylvania stories of 2017 with stories number 9, 8, and 7. You're listening to Countdown 2017 from the Radio Pennsylvania Network.
Butler Health System is more than a community hospital. It's a community of expertise trusted by our neighbors across the region. For renowned surgeon Dr. Tony Maloof, that means his neighbors are connected to a modern network of exceptional care.
While I'm part of a very close-knit group, I'm also a part of something bigger. Every day, I can see the difference this makes for my patients and for me.
But in its heart, Butler Health System retains the genuine caring of a community hospital, where patients are treated like friends and neighbors, because that's exactly who they are. And for orthopedic surgeon Thomas Mazzanegro, that caring is where it all begins.
We're committed to providing the absolute best care, and that means understanding what's important in the lives of our patients.
At BHS, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
And welcome back to Countdown 2017, a look back at the top 10 Pennsylvania stories of the year, as voted on by our news staff here at Radio Pennsylvania. I'm Brad Chrisman with Scott Lamar, and we're just getting started on this special hour of reflection. We're up to story number 9 and the changing face of the retail system for alcohol in Pennsylvania. For decades, Pennsylvania was compared with only Utah in the way the state approached liquor laws, with no reforms since the end of Prohibition. In recent years, state store hours were expanded and some grocery stores were able to sell beer and wine. The expansion blossomed in 2016, though, as beer and wine were cleared in thousands of additional retail outlets. The fruits of that labor were seen in 2017 as more and more bottles hit more and more store shelves.
We got Lone Star, PBR, Rolling Rock, Shiner Bock.
But even as that was happening, some lawmakers wanted more, such as hard liquor expansion or even eliminating the state store system altogether. Governor Tom Wolf balked at that idea.
What people, the citizens of Pennsylvania, were talking about was more convenience for wine and beer. And we produced that with Act 39. Let's make that work.
Budget talks eventually drifted toward more gambling. bottling rather than further alcohol expansion, but privatization advocates are likely to keep plugging away at what they see as the remaining alcohol issues in the state. The future of alcohol in Pennsylvania, one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. That, by the way, was the ultimate beer song that you heard in there by a guy named Zane Williams. Go look that up on YouTube. It's a fun song.
That you worked a country song about beer into your top 10 stories.
Well, they're all about beer in some fashion or another, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there were rumblings this year that lawmakers might look to expand hard liquor sales, much in the same way wine and beer were made available to grocery stores and other outlets. Is this a sign that those who want to do away with the state's role in selling alcohol may have gone from trying for a sweeping retreat from the industry, getting out all at once, to more of a tactical piece by piece, let's pick along as we go and eventually maybe be out of the retail business?
Well, Brad, we're not privy to those conversations behind closed doors by mostly the House Republican caucus. Speaker of the House, Mike Terzai, this has been his pet issue for years. And actually, this is a discussion that has gone on for more than 30 years.
I remember Tom Ridge talked about it.
I remember Dick Thornburg talking about it in the early 80s. So I don't know for sure whether that is the strategy or not. I will say this, from people I've talked to in the union that represents state store employees, they certainly believe that's the case, that it is going to be just chip away one step at a time. We also have to say that there have been some big changes in Pennsylvania over the past 3 years.
Finally, yeah.
I think that Governor Tom Wolf, that many people thought that this is something that he wouldn't be on board with. Maybe there's been some political horse trading over the last few years, but as you heard with the governor in that sound clip, I mean, he's on board with these changes now. This has been a major change in Pennsylvania over the last 3 years.
Yeah, but he seems very reluctant to expand the conversation to hard liquor. And I think it's because of what you mentioned, that that state store union is a powerful broker in Harrisburg.
It really is.
Yeah, and I think they have the governor's ear on that. They do need to be careful about this chipping away, though, because if you go too far, then the state store system would have very little value if you eventually go to sell that, because we've always considered that an asset. If it's not worth anything in the retail business, then all you're doing is selling for the property value at that point.
Yeah, there's that, and plus, a lot of times you have to be reminded about how much money the sale of liquor, beer, wine brings in to the state.
And even if it would be fully privatized, the tax money would still be coming to Pennsylvania.
Right.
So, there will always be a revenue flow from alcohol, but it's just
I also think, Brad, that something the governor mentioned, you will always hear from Pennsylvanians who will criticize the system, not everyone, but a lot of Pennsylvanians who will criticize the system because they've gone to other states and have been able to buy a case of beer in the grocery store, or it's been more convenient to them. Convenience, where you can buy alcohol in this state, has changed a lot, but we're still not on level with a lot of other states across the country.
We're up to number 8 in our countdown of the top 10 Pennsylvania stories of 2017, and this one made headlines when it happened in February, but then I think got very little attention the rest of the year. Anti-fracking advocates have long claimed the practice puts drilling regions at risk of increased seismic activity. But in February, the state's Department of Environmental Protection, for the very first time, confirmed that minor earthquakes in PA were due to fracking.
The base issue is several low magnitude earthquakes occurred in Lawrence County during the morning hours of April 25th, 2016.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
But in fact, it was unlikely anyone actually felt the earth move under their feet.
The magnitudes we were looking at were 1.8 to 2.3 on the Richter scale. And since the seismic events were recorded and felt only by seismometers, they were considered micro-seismic.
State officials say the phenomenon will be the focus of further study, and any potential regulation will be based on what researchers learn about the relatively new science of induced seismic events. Frack quakes, one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. Now, I want to mention we did have a somewhat significant East Coast quake in late November centered in Delaware. That's not what we're talking about here. That had nothing to do with fracking. These are microquakes, or whatever you want to call them. And as you just heard, they're only detectable by seismographic equipment. But, Scott, why should that still be a concern? Or should it be a concern?
This is radio, so you can't see me rolling my eyes. We're talking about earthquakes,
earthquakes.
Here, Brad. I have to admit that when we started hearing about whether there was a possibility of more seismic activity, more earthquakes where fracking was occurring, Oklahoma, Ohio were the two states that you heard about the most. I have to admit that many people just thought that, okay, that can't be. They're not disturbing the crust of the earth. They're not disturbing underground enough to cause activity. Well, as we've just shown, it has.
Yeah.
It has, and yeah, anytime you are disturbing and causing some seismic,
it's that underlying, I don't know if bedrock is the right word, but that rock that is under the East Coast here that they're pounding away at, that, and there's a shift after you get in there and mess around.
And I think there's a lot of unknown when you talk about why we should be concerned, because earthquakes can't be predicted.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of unknown here. It's just something else to be concerned about.
Well, that's it. That's the whole point. You know, I think about the people who live closest to the drill sites, and they've had, you know, from water to not getting their royalties the way they should. They've had so many things to worry about, and this just adds to the list whether or not they're actually feeling a physical manifestation yet or not. It's something else to think of. And we're up to the next story in our countdown, which is number 7, a story that serves as something of a sequel from our 2016 Top 10. Last year, the passage of Pennsylvania's medical marijuana law was a Top 10 story. In 2017, it's the implementation of the program that's making headlines as a top story. Registries for patients opened up and filled up fast.
We had over 1,000 patients register in less than 24 hours. That equates to about 3 new patients registering a minute.
But there's no actual burning in Pennsylvania's medical marijuana program, as State Physician General Dr. Rachel Levine tried to remind critics.
Forms of marijuana that are included include pills, oils, patches or ointments, tinctures, liquids, and through vaporization. So actually, it is not smoking.
A physician's registry is also open, and applications were processed for growers and dispensaries, all with an eye on full implementation early next year. The ramp-up of Pennsylvania's medical marijuana program, one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. Scott, you did a big show this fall about the implementation, especially the registry process. We heard some clips from that in that piece with Physician General Dr. Rachel Levine and John Collins, who's director of the State Office of Medical Marijuana. What'd you take away from that conversation?
This is one of the success stories in Pennsylvania. I don't want to make every issue, every story we talk about here sound like politics, but both Republicans and Democrats in Harrisburg will point to medical marijuana as an issue in which they were able to come together and come to some kind of agreement. And just a couple of years ago, it didn't look like that was going to happen. But the people who will use medical marijuana for pain, the children who are suffering from seizures, they will benefit from this. I think it's taken a little bit longer than what a lot of people expected, but you know, some of those children who are suffering from seizures were able to get a jump on getting medical marijuana first. So
yeah,
maybe this is a model of how Pennsylvania could work on legislation that benefits many people.
And credit where credit is due. It was Mike Fulmer, the Republican senator of Lebanon County, who really unclogged this logjam that had been holding up this movement toward medical marijuana for many, many years. And again, full implementation won't come until we get into 2018, but everything's being ramped up right now. And in the meantime, more parents of kids with those seizure disorders were able to get an early jump on the treatment here in 2017. We'll take a break here, but coming up, we'll cross the midway point of our 2017 countdown with the top 10 stories of 2017. You're listening to Countdown 2017 from the Radio Pennsylvania Network.
Tired of the poor selection of Christmas trees due to the tree shortage in the area? Well, don't worry. You will find the tree you're looking for at City Landscape Supply, located at 603 East Jefferson Street in Butler, already stocked with a wide variety of trees, Douglas fir, blue spruce, and more, at the very best prices in town. You'll be treated to hot cocoa as you survey the tree lot, looking for that just right tree for your home. The kids will each get candy canes while the staff trims the tree and wraps it for the ride home. Create memories for your family while picking a tree at City Landscape Supply in Butler, open daily.
I'd like to suggest that now, right now, is the time to pre-plan a funeral. Now, not right after the death of a loved one, because right after the death of a loved one is exactly the wrong time to ask a million questions about funeral arrangements. Where? Which casket or cremation? Which minister, priest, or rabbi? Visitations? Flowers? And on it goes. Now is the time to make these decisions, before you're at the depths of your emotions and not even thinking straight. That's why Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler suggests that you pre-plan now. Think about it, now, and then talk it over with Thompson Miller. Call 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or www.thompson-miller.com. Pre-arrangements make sense. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back to Radio PA's countdown of the top 10 Pennsylvania stories of the year. This is Countdown 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman with Scott Lamar, and we're up to story number six. From Charlottesville to social media, one of the things 2017 will be remembered for is the rise again of hate in America. That ugly trend impacted Pennsylvania early in the year, and that is story number six. Blame the times, blame the leaders, blame social media. No matter what or who is to blame, the flames of hate were raging in America in 2017. Among the manifestations were a series of attacks and threats against Jewish community centers. In one weekend in late February, a Jewish cemetery was vandalized in Philadelphia, while threats were phoned in to Jewish community centers in Harrisburg and York. Governor Tom Wolf drew the line that this will not fly in Pennsylvania.
These acts are cowardly and disturbing. We must find those responsible and hold them accountable for these hate crimes.
In a shocking twist, one suspect arrested in connection to some of the threats was a 19-year-old Jewish man with dual Israeli and American citizenship. The perpetrators of the vandalism in Philadelphia remain unknown, but their efforts, as always, had the opposite effect of their intentions.
They will fail in their attempts to instill fear in all of us.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars were raised to restore those grave markers. The continuing failure of hate, one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. And I wanted to stress in that piece that this is about the failure of hate, the continuing failure of hate that we're highlighting, because it always does fail in its mission and, in fact, usually accomplishes the exact opposite, galvanizing those who represent what's good in this country. Perhaps no better example this year than that Charlottesville incident, which started out with those idiots marching with tiki torches. Okay, fun to watch and fun to make fun of. But, of course, then you also had the tragic incident with the hate manifesting itself in the form of a maniac driving into the crowd there. But hate always fails. That's the message.
Well, it does, Brad, but sometimes it doesn't seem like it does. Yeah. Because I know you're going to talk about social media here in just a moment. But social media, if you go by social media, you don't have to go far before you can find an example of one person or one group criticizing another in the most personal of terms, the most hateful of terms. And it makes you wonder, we're in 2017. How does this continue to occur?
That, I think that's the question we all ask ourselves, especially when these things flare up. And you're right, I am going to talk about social media because I believe social media is fueling this whole thing. I heard somebody the other day use a term, and I'm adopting it, and I'm going to use it. It's not social media, it's anti-social media. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, and you know, you talk about seeing people spread that kind of stuff. What bothers me more than anything is when I see people I know, people I'm connected to on Facebook, maybe not a close friend, but someone that I'm quote-unquote friends with on Facebook, who post these ridiculous things, and it's almost too much to take sometimes.
And I think that I'm not alone in that I've actually unfriended people like
I have
that.
Too.
People
I
that
have too.
I looked at and said, okay, I know this person. I consider them an intelligent person, good sense of humor, always like them. And then see some of those comments, it's like, well, maybe I didn't know that person very well at all.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hate has always been an ugly thing, so it doesn't necessarily have the ability to really surprise us. What does come as a surprise is when something ominous comes from a source we would never expect it to come from. It was 2016 when the news broke that this American icon was apparently not what we all thought he was, And in 2017, he went on trial for his alleged misdeeds right here in Pennsylvania. This is story number five. In the 70s and 80s, he was beloved. Some called him America's TV dad.
I am your father. I brought you in this world, and I'll take you out.
But the Bill Cosby revealed in the pages of his indictment was a very different person indeed. The comedian was accused of drugging women and sexually assaulting them over decades, and his trial would be held in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. In June, a hung jury resulted in a mistrial, and as Cosby left the courthouse, his jubilation was cleared. Defense attorney Brian McMonagle did not get an acquittal, but he'll take the mistrial.
The judge is right. Justice is real. It lives here in Montgomery County.
And Montgomery County District Attorney Kevin Steele foreshadowed a theme that would dominate headlines later in the year.
We hope that doing this and moving forward in this case sends a strong message that victims of these type of crimes can come forward and can be heard.
Another trial is scheduled for 2018, but the mistrial of Bill Cosby is one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. I mean, who didn't love The Cosby Show in the 80s?
One of my favorites.
It was a great TV show. It was a family TV show, and all of that now is just shattered. It was especially poignant that in June, Montgomery County DA Kevin Steele made that comment about hoping that women will have a day when they can safely come forward and tell their tales of sexual harassment, abuse, and assault. And that day certainly arrived in 2017, didn't it?
Give a little bit of information here that foretells where we're going with this Top 10 series that hasn't actually made the top 10, the number of women who have come forward late in 2017 to talk about sexual harassment and sexual assault. But the Bill Cosby, I don't know what you would call it, trial, scandal, whatever you want to call it, certainly foretold what was coming later in the year. You know, it's funny, Brad, funny not in a ha-ha way, but funny that you hear very little about Bill Cosby today.
Yeah.
Because there have been so many men that have been accused of sexual misconduct.
I interviewed Cosby a few years ago, and it was it was one of the thrills of my career.
I remember
frankly.
That. You were thrilled.
It was over the phone, but he gave me 45 minutes. He was very generous and kind with his time, and now I can't even brag about that because it turns out that he's a creep. It's sad. It's sad to see an icon fall, and especially in the way that Bill Cosby has. Now, we're going to see all of this repeat itself, at least we're scheduled to, in 2018, as Cosby is slated to be retried. I think that's scheduled for March, if I'm not mistaken.
So it's just a few months away.
Yeah. We want to get one more installment of the Top 10 in before we take another break. I think for this story, what I need to do is just come up with a generic Top 10 story about it and then replay it every year, because the things that we've come to know that we can count on now include death, taxes, and fiscal mismanagement in Harrisburg. The end of fiscal year 17 brought another structural deficit and another difficult scenario for Republican state lawmakers and a Democratic governor who have allowed squabbling and ideologies to get in the way of responsible budgeting. But this year's budget address by Governor Tom Wolf gave hope that this year would be different.
I believe that we can leave the frustrating politics of old behind us. In my proposed budget, there are no broad-based tax increases.
Flash forward to July and another incomplete budget.
Another day older and deeper in debt.
Lawmakers did pass a budget, but not the mechanisms to pay for it. A dysfunctional House and frustrated Senate jockeyed for months before finally coming up with another Franken-budget scenario, patching together more borrowing, gimmicks, and a massive expansion of gambling, leaving Republicans scrambling to justify the tactic.
This provides greater incentive to draw those individuals who choose to gamble back into Pennsylvania.
Another year of budgetary tomfoolery in Harrisburg. One of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. I like that word, tomfoolery.
I was impressed that you were able to get tomfoolery in this.
I have other words that I use to describe what's happening down at the Capitol, but I can't say them on the radio.
Tomfoolery is pretty good.
What more is there to say about what's happening in the budget process year after year? For several years now, the state's just been limping along, and each year it sinks a little bit more. We saw before the budget process started this year, we had the treasurer and the auditor general both saying, hey, the bank accounts are going to run dry if you guys don't get a good budget put in place. And then they just screw around again this year. What more is there to say about it?
You would think that they would learn from past experiences, and it hasn't happened. you know, I've heard many people say over the past few years that the legislature has one job, and that is to come up with a budget. Now, that's not exactly true.
There's a little more
there's
to it,
little
than,
more
that.
To it yeah. than that. But if you look at what legislators are there for, a spending plan and finding revenue to pay for that spending plan is one of their main responsibilities. And not being able to deliver that on time, June 30th, at the end of the fiscal year, year after year after year, it just, again, gets back to, is this a functioning institution, the legislature in Pennsylvania? And not to say that the governors have not been at fault as well.
Oh, no, there's plenty of blame to go around here. Yeah.
You know, there are a few ways to look at this. I mean, you can say that it's all politics, that there are people in the House, Republicans especially, have been fingers being pointed at them, saying they hold up budgets every year mm-hmm. because of their ideology. But other people will look at that and say, well, those things are their priority. And yes, they may be willing to compromise on some of these things, but other things are so important to them that they're not. But when you can't get a budget passed till 3 months afterwards, and remember, we had a nine-month budget impasse.
Just 2 years ago.
Yeah, just 2 years ago, that there's something wrong. And you have to ask yourself, if you are a legislator, what are we doing wrong? What can we do differently?
And again, there's plenty of blame to go around, but to me it does come back to that absolute line in the sand that's been drawn by, and it's not all Republicans that have done it, it's that far hard right group that won't abide by any even discussion of a tax increase. Now, I know saying, you know, we're not raising your taxes, no new taxes, that sells great when it comes time for reelection. It looks wonderful in a brochure, but there comes a time when you don't have the revenue streams coming in to run the state that the state starts to suffer. And what we've seen with these tactics being employed, that it's actually costing us more because the state's mismanagement then trickles down and it puts more financial pressure and stress on the counties, municipalities, and especially the school districts, who then do raise the local taxes probably by more than what we would have seen in a state tax raise. That's what most people, I think, don't get about this whole process.
I think one of the biggest criticisms that Pennsylvanians could have that is accurate is that our legislature doesn't take the long view, that many of these budgets are passed, as you said, with smoke and mirrors. We've heard yeah. that. We've heard the other cliche, kicking the can down the road, yeah. that there are not permanent fixes happening here, that we just do what we have to do to get by this year, and 3 months later we're going to be looking at the same thing, because literally 3 months from now, less than 3 months from now, Governor Wolf will be proposing another spending plan. And when you talk about the negative impact on the state, no one wants to pay higher taxes. There is no doubt. I mean, if you ask anyone, they're going to say, no, I don't want to pay higher taxes. But at the same time, again, you do have to look at this responsibly and say, okay, where is this revenue going to come from? Spending cuts can be part of it.
And spending is a big part of this story, too. Let's not gloss over that. We spend too much.
But, you know, Brad, I think something that many people miss is that when Pennsylvania's borrowing power, Pennsylvania borrowed this year to enable yeah. themselves to balance this budget. And, you know, our credit rating has gone down.
More than once.
Right. The credit yeah. rating's going down. So what yeah. that means is that when the money that has been borrowed is paid back, it will be at a higher interest rate.
Well, and when we borrow more, which we will, it'll be at a higher interest rate. We're spiraling. We're spiraling, and something needs to break. Now, in November, a referendum passed that could change the tax landscape in Pennsylvania dramatically, including a potential elimination of property taxes and a shift to a higher income and sales tax. I would hope that lawmakers, especially on the Republican side, would use that opportunity when we're just going to redo the whole tax system to reevaluate the overall amount of money that the state needs to bring in to operate it effectively, because it hasn't been operating effectively for a while now. And maybe they can use that tax shift as cover for bringing in the revenue we need to bring in? You say no.
No, I'm shaking my head no, because that has been one of the reasons that we have not had property taxes eliminated or tax reform up until now, is because there is a segment of the population, a segment of the legislature, look at it and say, oh, if we eliminate property taxes, we have to find that revenue to make up for it. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But people who look at it and say, this is a tax increase in disguise. That's what you're really looking for. And no doubt there will be a tax shift if you eliminate property taxes or at least reduce them, because money will have to come from somewhere. That means there will be an increase in the personal income tax or in, you know, some other kind of tax out there. But there are going to be winners and losers in this.
There will be. There will be. It's going to be very interesting to see if anything comes from that now passed referendum. We'll break here before we get into the top three stories, but we are edging ever closer to the number one story of the year. This is Countdown 2017 from the Radio Pennsylvania Network.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 4646. The pick 3, 493. Pick 4, 8853. The pick 5, 05430. The wild ball for each of those is 3. The treasure hunt, 6, 14, 21, 24, and 25. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $50,000.
Hey folks, do you realize how long Miller's Shoes has been a presence on Main Street in downtown Butler? Would you believe 125 years? Yes, they're celebrating their 125th anniversary. Families have been shopping for quality and value at Miller's Shoes for well over a century. They're at 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler. And with winter weather on us, Miller's Shoes is your headquarters for overshoes and boots for the bad weather. Timberland Shoes and Boots, for example. Many other famous name brands too, Rockport, Trotters, and all of your famous name brand athletic shoes. Miller's Shoes, also your local headquarters for America's favorite comfort shoes, SAS Shoes. You'll find them for men and women, various styles and colors at Miller's Shoes. And don't forget, for gift giving, gift certificates. What a great idea for a holiday gift for someone special. A gift certificate from Miller's Shoes. Stop in, talk to Jimmy Chipran and the folks at Miller's Shoes, 215 South Main Street in downtown Butler, now celebrating their 125th anniversary.
Welcome back to Countdown 2017 from Radio Pennsylvania. We're taking one last look back at the top 10 stories of the year here in the Commonwealth. And we're about to enter the top three, the biggest stories of the year that was. At number three, we have a high-profile and very public rift between two of the top elected officials in the state. In April, reports of verbal abuse and other mistreatment by Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack and his wife Tanya prompted Governor Tom Wolf to revoke Stack's security detail and other staff.
I want to make sure that we have a safe, decent workplace for our employees, and that's what is motivating me. Here.
Stack told reporters he knew he had some issues to deal with.
I have to do better. Tanya has to do better at just making sure that exercise a little restraint of think before speaking.
But don't be cruel to who heart is true.
As a result of the turmoil, Senator David Argall introduced a bill to allow gubernatorial candidates to pick their own running mates.
They've openly admitted that they don't work together very well and that sometimes they don't even speak. That's embarrassing. I think we can do better.
That proposed constitutional amendment would not be able to pass in time for the 2018 election, however. The Rift, one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. I thought that Stack press conference was one of the more bizarre things that happened this year. He called reporters into his office, and I didn't go back and count, but I would say that he probably used the phrase, I have to do better, about a dozen times, like it was some kind of mantra or a mandated mea culpa, where the governor said, you've got to say, I could do better, I could do better. And then I stuck that last soundbite in because when David Argall talked about, he said, we can do better. And I knew that was a jab. That was a jab.
Well, just think about what the governor said in that clip.
Yeah.
When you call this situation bizarre, you call the press conference bizarre.
I did.
But how bizarre is it that the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania says in talking about his lieutenant governor that we have to create a safe place.
Yeah, how about that?
I mean, that's bizarre. That is unprecedented.
The other thing that Stack said that kind of drew a lot of headlines out of that was, you know, if you're around me enough, I'm going to have a Stack moment.
Yeah.
That's what he called it, a Stack moment, where maybe he's not quite so kind. But, of course, that led to the Argyle bill, which would completely revamp how we pick a lieutenant governor, taking the choice out of the voters' hands with regards to independent primaries and to basically give the choice to the gubernatorial candidates themselves, much like presidents pick their running mates nationally. Voters, of course, would still have their say in voting for the ticket overall, just not in picking the lieutenant governor independently in the primaries.
Many times you have heard people over the years saying that, you know, why have a lieutenant governor at all?
Yeah.
There are states that don't have lieutenant governors. But what I always respond to those people is that just think about Pennsylvania over the past 20 years, where we have had lieutenant governors that have had to succeed governors.
Tom Ridge went to Washington and Mark Schweiker had to step up. You do need a lieutenant governor.
Mark Single became acting governor when Bob Casey was out of commission for a few months after a double organ transplant. So
there's a couple of good examples in just the last 25 years. We're up to story number two in the countdown, which also ties into Harrisburg's inability to solve its fiscal problems like a normal functioning state would. This story we'll see play out significantly in 2018. As Pennsylvania takes its place as a mecca for gamblers. State lawmakers passed a budget on time. They just didn't pass the funding mechanisms to pay for it. Governor Tom Wolf let it become law without his signature, and then we all waited. Waited for Harrisburg to tell us how they would pay for the $32 billion spending plan. After the House self-destructed in its efforts, the Senate stepped up. In the end, lawmakers approved a massive package of gambling expansion.
With this bill, we will be becoming a gambling state without parallel. We will be enticing our 18-year-olds to gamble online on their cell phones and computers while still in high school.
Don't bet money, honey.
But supporters tried hard to justify adding 10 new mini casinos, online gaming, iLottery sales, and other gambling mechanisms for revenue.
We are in competition with our sister states, and this provides greater incentive to draw those individuals who choose to gamble back into Pennsylvania.
Another year of putting off the difficult revenue decisions. One of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017, I'm Brad Chrisman. The only time I can remember that I've actually used a soundbite in two different pieces of the same top 10, and that was the Seth Grove piece where, because I just found the comment so, well, I'll say ridiculous, that they're doing this because they want to draw people back into Pennsylvania to gamble. That was the exact same argument that we had when we started the casino business to begin with. Well, we got to bring that money back from Atlantic City. It's just an attempt to justify this online or this expansion. So online gaming, iLottery, slots at truck stops and airports, they'll have big impacts. But it's the 10 new mini casinos that stirred up some of the hottest debate, especially that 25-mile buffer zone for existing casinos. And we'll just take Penn National Gaming here in Central PA as an example. You could locate a mini casino 25 miles, be officially out of that buffer zone, but still take a big chunk of business away from Hollywood Casino, run by Penn National, and they're not happy about it.
No, they're not. In fact, I have to say that I was surprised at the reaction from some of the owners of the casinos, because Penn National in particular, because Penn National did research to find out where their customers came from, and many of them came from more than 25 miles away.
Yep.
And what they're concerned about is that it will cut into the revenue that they make at their facility in Grantville, if it's just 25 miles away. I don't know. There may be pressure. There may be pressure on Penn National and maybe some companies that are like-minded to go ahead and do it. But one thing, Brad, we've also seen is that there are many, many municipalities in the state that have opted out and said, we don't want
a mini casino
here. Yeah. And I'm beginning to wonder where they're going to be.
Yeah, will they find 10 locations that will take them? They're also, by the way, in this package, going to allow daily fantasy tournaments at casinos so we can go up and play fantasy football. And you can lose there just like you lose in our office league here.
What do you mean? I have the I'm tied for the most championships.
That's true. Tied with
okay,
me.
Okay.
All right.
That's a whole entire program.
But neither one of us is bringing home the hardware this year.
Not this year.
There's only one story left in our 2017 countdown of the top Pennsylvania stories. Which one was the biggest of them all this year? We'll give you the big reveal when we return to Countdown 2017 from Radio Pennsylvania. In January, Radio PA will bring you a very special edition of Ask the Governor, as former Governor Tom Corbett returns for an in-depth tell-all interview that includes the questions we've been waiting for him to answer about Kathleen Kane, Jerry Sandusky, the Penn State factor in his 2014 re-election loss, the combative state legislature, and much more.
I lost. Move on. Some people have told me you need to go on a tour called the I Told You So tour.
Have you Monday morning quarterbacked the 2014 election?
Sure.
If you could say something to Kathleen Kane, what would you say? You can hear this special edition of Ask the Governor on many of these local Radio PA affiliates in January. Check with your local station for the date and time of broadcast. You can also hear the interview in its entirety, including segments not included in the radio broadcast, at pamatters.com starting January 8th. Former Governor Tom Corbett in a no-holds-barred interview from the studios of Radio PA. Ask the Governor is an exclusive presentation of Radio Pennsylvania and pamatters.com.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Safe, honey.
Whether you're a competitive athlete or a weekend warrior, any injury that keeps you on the sidelines should be treated by a sports medicine expert. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers offers sports medicine specialists right here in Butler to get you back to enjoying the activities you love. Doctors Rob Waltrip, Josh Szabo, and John Richmond have trained with some of the biggest names in orthopedic sports medicine and use their expertise to treat you. Tri-Rivers accepts most major insurance plans, including both Highmark and UPMC. Learn more at TriRiversMSK.com. Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, partnering with the Butler community for more than 20 years.
Welcome back to Countdown 2017 from Radio Pennsylvania. I'm Brad Chrisman with Scott Lamar in our Harrisburg studios. We're approaching the moment this entire hour has been building to, but before we reveal the number one story of the year, a couple of stories that didn't make the cut in 2017. The state's Auditor General of Pennsylvania, Eugene DePasquale, one of the state's highest elected officials, called for the legalization of recreational marijuana. That was something. Former Penn State President Graham Spanier was convicted on one misdemeanor count, and that brought an end to the active prosecutions connected to the Jerry Sandusky scandal. Glad to see that story go away. Eric Freen sentenced to death for that 2014 murder, assassination, if you will, of a state police corporal in northeastern PA, another trooper severely wounded. President Trump marked his 100th day in office here in Pennsylvania. And also, before we reveal the number one story, Scott, let's recap the rest of the top 10.
At number 10, the House State Government Committee is in chaos.
Number 9, the future of alcohol in Pennsylvania.
Number 8, frackquakes.
Number 7, the implementation of the state's medical marijuana program.
Number 6, hate loses again.
Number 5, the Bill Cosby mistrial.
Number 4, more budget nonsense.
Number 3, the rift between Governor Wolf and Lieutenant Governor Mike Stack.
Number 2, more gambling expansion.
And that brings us to the number 1 story, which was number 8 in 2015, number 3 in 2016, And sadly, the body counts have pushed it all the way to number one in 2017.
The prescription opioid crisis really spans the state and many areas of our country. So this is an urban issue, for instance, in Philadelphia or in Pittsburgh, but it is also a suburban issue, and it is a significant rural issue as well.
It's not like state officials are ignoring the problem. Dozens of Centers for Excellence dot the Commonwealth's map. These centers offer immediate and follow-up treatment and community support. But Pennsylvania's overdose rate ranks sixth highest in the nation. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania's Attorney General is among a group of top prosecutors nationwide examining Big Pharma's role in the heroin problem.
80% of the heroin addicts start by using a legal prescription drug. Think about that for a second.
As the annual death toll approaches 5,000, the continuing heroin and opioid epidemic is one of Radio PA's top 10 stories of 2017. I'm Brad Chrisman. Scott, you shook your head when you heard the number 5,000 there, but that is where we're heading. It's been increasing every year. We saw 3,000 a couple of years ago, 4,000, and we don't know the number yet for 2017, but it could be.
It is one of the saddest stories ever. And, Brad, I have to say that whoever thought that we would get to this point? I mean, yes, as I think you heard the Attorney General say, that 80% of those who are now abusing heroin started with prescription drugs. But heroin, one of the things that's changed over the last few decades is heroin is so cheap.
Yeah.
That I understand that on the streets of cities like York, Lancaster, that you can buy a bag of heroin for $5 or $7.
That's insane.
It really is.
Yeah.
This used to be a problem just in the inner cities of Pennsylvania and across the country. Now it has spread to the suburbs, the most rural.